Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyne. The world of classical ballet is one of tradition. Choreography for ballets like Sleeping Beauty or Swan Lake has been passed down through generations of dancers and choreographers. The Royal Danish Ballet has been keeping the works of 19th century choreographer August Bournonville true to their creator.
His 1836 ballet, La Sylphide, opens tonight at the Milwaukee Ballet. It's choreographed by the Royal Danish Ballet's Dinna Bjørn. Bjørn joins me in the studio now. Dinna, welcome to Lake Effect. It is such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Well, thank you for inviting me to come.
Is this the first time you have been here in Milwaukee?
No, I've actually been here one time before, which is, I think, already 13 years ago, where I was staging a small piece of Auguste Bournonville called the Conservatoire. So, and at that time, I already talked with director Michael Pink about La Sylphide, which is maybe one of the most famous ballets of Auguste Bournonville. And I knew he wanted to bring it to the company, but... Well,
scheduling.
Yes, that's it. And now it's finally happening, and I'm very happy about that.
Yeah, we are too. And you mentioned the original choreographer, Auguste Bournonville. And so if you could tell us a little bit about what makes him so important in the world of ballet and why this particular piece is so beloved.
Yes, well, Auguste Bournonville was, in a way, he was not the founder of the Royal Danish Ballet, but he sort of founded the repertoire that the Royal Danish Ballet has become famous for, and that's about 12 ballets that are still performed in the repertoire in Copenhagen. And what is special about it is it's ballets who were all created in the 19th century. La Sylphide is from 1836. And they have been preserved in the original version since then because they have always been performed so frequently with the repertoire in Copenhagen that there has always been dancers who knew the choreography could pass it on to the next generation. So we know that actually those steps who the audience now will see here in Milwaukee are exactly the same steps that Auguste Bournonville created himself in 1836. And that's very special.
That is, to think that we're seeing something that audiences then saw.
Exactly. There is a big Russian repertoire, and Petit Pas is very well known as the creator of a choreography for the big Tchaikovsky ballet, Swan Lake and Sleeping Beauty. But actually, the steps are not authentic anymore. They have been redone and redone so many times that one doesn't really know if there is one step who is original anymore. But with Bournonville, we know that this is how he created it. Of course, it has changed because it's a living tradition. And the dancers who have done the roles have put their own personality in them. And certain things have then become a tradition because one dancer maybe did it that way or interpreted that role that way. And then this has been passed on to the next generation. So in that way, of course, there has been changes, but only minor changes. And I feel being like a conservator of the original style. I feel that it's very important when I stage the ballet to give the dancers who do it this feeling of that they are really doing those steps who were created at that time.
They're channeling it in some way.
Yeah.
I know you danced the lead role when you were dancing. What did you bring to it? What did you find as a dancer that was exciting about this ballet and about the role?
Well, this ballet has sort of followed me since I was a child because my father was also a ballet dancer and he lived with that ballet through his life. He did one of the three roles in the ballet, the third big role, there is James, the male hero. Then there is La Sylphide, the female heroine. And then there is a third character, which is a very special character, the witch called Madge, who traditionally is played both by men and women. And this role became, in a way, my father's signature role. He performed it through 40 years. He did his last performance of it when he was 82.
I'm impressed.
So it's a role that you can live with for a long, long time. So when I was a child, I already came to the theater and I saw my father in that ballet and I already had a connection with it. When I then later on joined the company, I did first all the corps de ballet parts, being the Scottish woman in the first act, dancing the Scottish reel and being one of the many sylphs in the second act. And then eventually I got the wonderful possibility to interpret the main role. And of course, I have to say one of the very special things for me about doing that part was to do it with my father. I mean, Match and Lazelfie, they're never on stage at the same time, but still to be in that same performance with my father doing Match and myself doing Lazelfie, it was very special.
I bet. Mm-hmm. How wonderful. Most of us don't have the opportunity to work with our parents in that way.
No, this was really very special. And and then I must say, this role is, of course, it's like a dream role, for a classical ballet dancer in Copenhagen. I think that's one of the roles that everybody would like to do when you are a young dancer and you're dreaming about doing Lazelfie. Of course, because she is, in a way, the personification of the romantic ballet, with the wings, the lightness, the pointe shoes, the etheric quality. I mean, she's sort of embodying, in a way, the ideal of classical ballet.
But what we think of when we think of a ballerina, that beauty of line, that gorgeousness, it's almost effortless. You know, it looks like you're not actually doing anything, but of course you are.
Exactly, and that's what Bournonville wanted with his ballets. He wanted, in a way, dance to look like it's so easy. One should not look at the efforts that the dancers had to have in order to perform it. One should just enjoy it and be relaxed and feel that this is maybe something I could do myself. Well, when it comes to the role of Lazelfie, she has also this other quality that she's not from this world. The character of the Sylphie, she's like a creature of nature. And she can also be interpreted as being James' dreams. James' romantic dreams about a better world, something ideal that he feels he doesn't get in his normal life. He's going to marry, he's going to take over the house, he has a lot of responsibility. And maybe the Sylphie represents for him like a dream of escaping all the responsibility and finding something that's purer and more beautiful than anything he has ever experienced. And that's the dream that he's pursuing. But, there is a moral in that ballet, and it is that you should not, it's okay to dream, but you should not run away from what is your real life, your real happiness in life, which should have been the marriage with Effie for James. You should not, because then if you run away from it, the consequences is going to hit you. And in this ballet, the consequences are, in a way, in the person of Match, the witch, who punishes James for having done what he did.
Dare to live in the dream rather than in his real life.
Exactly.
Yeah. So talk a little bit about the kind of technique that the dancers here are working on with you, because from what we're talking about, it sounds like it's a little different than the kind of work that they would normally do under Michael or some of the other choreographers that have come through.
Yes, well, there are two aspects to it. There is the actual dancing, the choreography, which is classical ballet steps that the dancers, of course, know from their daily training. But the way Bournonville put his steps together is different. You have different preparations to those steps that you know, and that can be very awkward for a dancer because you train so many years and every time you do a certain step, you are used to, for this step, there is a certain preparation, how you get into that step, and another way where you usually get out of it. And suddenly they have to do that same step, but with a different preparation and coming out of it in a different way, which, you have to get it into your body first. And then what is very special about the Bournonville style is how you are holding your arms. Because the Bournonville Well, as he said, he didn't want it to look difficult. But on the other hand, it still looks, I mean, you can see to do these big jumps and this very, very fast footwork. There's a lot of very fast footwork. It's difficult. But the way the dancer make it look effortless is the way they hold their upper body. That should look like nothing is going on there in the feet. This just should be so gracious and so beautiful with the effortless lines and harmonious positions. And that is different from also how most dancers are trained these days, because you are trained to use the arms much more. The arms should sort of help you to do the big jumps. And if you are suddenly told that they should just be held low and not being used for anything, then you feel like, oh, but then I can't do these steps with the legs. So that's what's the difficulty. And for an audience who looks at it, I mean, what you will notice is the beauty of the upper body. Then you really see the lines of shoulders and necks and beautiful rounded arms. And also, I feel it's sort of including the audience a bit more, because with these round arms and like open hands, you're sort of inviting the audience in instead of maybe making the audience sit back and just admire. Here you somehow should be sort of invited into being part of what's happening on stage.
And what I'm seeing right now is you doing exactly that. I wish I could show this to everyone who's listening, because you've just demonstrated exactly what it is, that invitation, that kind of welcome into the story, into what's happening on stage. And as you say, it's incredibly graceful.
Yes.
And gracious.
Yes, that's I think, if one should use some few words to characterize Bournonville's style, it is this, the graciousness and the that you are inviting in. It should be including this style. And when you dance in a Bournonville ballet, you also somehow, you do not only dance for the audience, but you actually also dance for the people who are around you on stage. So there's not just like one front, which is the audience, but you also include the people on stage. You will see that in the variations they do in the first act. It's a party scene. It's supposed to be the happy wedding that unfortunately ends not so happily. But before they know the ending, there is a party, and there are variations in dancing that where you can see this kind of including style.
We talked at the beginning of this about how little things have changed. People have put their stamp on the roles and the ballet, but yet it has retained its originality. How do you keep a ballet like this from becoming just a museum piece? You know, how do you keep that story interesting to an audience in 2017 who's very different from an audience in Copenhagen in 1836?
Absolutely. And this is a big challenge for those of us who now have taken that responsibility to try and pass on this tradition. Because exactly as you say, it should not look like a museum piece. It's not a reconstruction of how it looked in 1836, because that would make it dead in a way. So what is a big challenge is that you live it still today. When you pass it on, it has to be passed on like it's being created now. And of course, it's partly the job of the one who stages it, which in this case is me. But for me, the material is so fresh still, because it is a challenge for a dancer of today to do this thing. It's not easy. So there is this challenge, first of all. But then the story is also, I feel that the story in Lassel Feet is a story that's in a way is eternal. When you start to go into the characters and understand what it's about, and it's about making choices in life and to hopefully make the right choice. And if you make the wrong choice, there is a consequence, well, also of your right choice. There are always consequences. And I mean, it's all sort of told in this story. So in a way, to make the dancers feel that they are part of a story that they can relate to themselves, like I think also the audience who sees a piece will be able to relate to this story. There's always something in your own life where you can see, yes, I also had to make some choices, and I wonder, did I do the right one? I was in that situation. I mean, so you can go into the story, but you could also just choose to enjoy that it's a beautiful piece of dance. It's a piece of art. The dancing is nice to watch. The music is very nice. I think it makes you in the right mood. It's composed especially for this piece. Bournonville, he ordered that music from a Norwegian composer, Løvenskiold, who lived, Norway was part of Denmark at that time. So he was composing on Bournonville's orders. So it's really following the moods. You can really hear now it changes. Now it's a sad mood. Now it's a dramatic mood. Now it's just joyful. And so you can even just sit and enjoy the music.
Even if you closed your eyes. But I wouldn't. I would not want to close my eyes.
No, I
would want to see all of this beauty on stage. And like you say, it's something that we don't normally get to see.
Yes, it is. It is different from, I think. I know that the repertoire here is, you are very lucky here to have a lot of narrative ballets, ballets that tell stories, because that's what Michael Pink is choreographing. And I mean, I don't know if he's influenced by Bournonville. I know he has seen Bournonville ballets also. And Bournonville was one of the first really big storytellers, of choreographer. A very famous person in Denmark who was born exactly the same year as Bournonville, which is 1805. And his name is Hans Christian Andersen, who was a very famous fairy tale writer in Denmark, who actually wanted to become a ballet dancer himself. But he has two big feet. So he couldn't make a career as a dancer, but he was always very interested in ballet. So he was watching ballets, and he liked what Bournonville did, and he called really Bournonville for a ballet poet, said that he was making ballet as if it was poetry. We could almost read a story out of his movements and the way he put things together.
Dina, I am so looking forward to seeing this, but I want to thank you for coming and telling us a little bit about it. I hope you'll also consider coming back and setting some more ballets at some point. I think that would be wonderful.
I would love to, because I think the company here, since they are so used to do narrative ballets, they have taken this very well. And I think they're going to do a fantastic performance of it. I'm looking so much forward to seeing it on stage now.
Tusen tak.
Selv tak.
Dina Bjørn is a Danish ballet dancer and choreographer and a leading authority on the work of choreographer August Bournonville. She choreographs La Sylphide, which is on stage from the Milwaukee Ballet through Sunday at the Marcus Center's Eline Hall. There is more information at WUWM.com.